Welcome to You Speaks Out, a show by, for, and about young people. It airs on the first Sunday of each month from 3 to 4 p.m. and is hosted by young people in Mendocino County. We want to create a place where young people can talk truthfully about important issues in our lives and have a dialogue with the community of listeners. Today's hosts are me, Colton,
Hanani,
Emma,
and Heaven.
And we all attend Laytonville High School.
We are members of the mock trial team. We recently won the Mendocino County competition, and we will represent the county at the state finals later this month. In about 15 minutes, we will explain what mock trial is and what we have learned from being on the team. First, though, we're going to listen to excerpts from a public forum called Meth Awareness. It was held in Laytonville in November and sponsored by Laytonville Health Start.
Meth refers to the methamphetamine commonly called crank or speed. In our communities, alcohol and marijuana are the most frequently abused substances. Meth comes in third in most areas and often results in psychosis, violence, ill health, and devastating addiction. Initial use of meth creates euphoria, self-confidence, and energy to accomplish tasks. This results in a reward circuit for a job well done, homework completed, or praise for perseverance. Meth is a powerful antidepressant at first, and our culture favors chatty, perky attitudes. The after effect of meth use is a depletion of serotonin and dopamine, leaving the user very depressed and foggy, and thus an addiction cycle is easily begun.
Staying up for days without eating is common among the meth users. This level of abuse is called tweaking and frequently includes the abuse of alcohol in an attempt to control energy surges. As Candy from the Long Valley Health Center says in the recording we're about to hear, your body has to dream, and if you're not wise enough to lay down and sleep, your body will dream while you're awake, and that's basically why people hallucinate. Here are the excerpts from a public forum on meth awareness held in Laytonville last November.
For those of you who don't know me, my name is Jama Shields, and I'm the coordinator here at Healthy Start Family Resource Center, and I just want to thank you all for coming tonight to be here at our meth awareness night. Lyndon Duke, who's the chief of the Caddo Police Department, came in a couple months ago and asked if Healthy Start would be willing to work with the tribe on hosting a night about methamphetamine awareness, and we said absolutely. So,
as Jama said, I'm Lyndon Duke, chief of police of the Caddo Tribe. On my right is Carol Orton, licensed clinical social worker for the Caddo Tribe, and Candy Muzio from Long Valley Health Center. Methamphetamine was first developed in Germany in 1880s, about 1887. It was actually kind of a quiet drug for quite a few years. Got popular somewhat in the 20s, and then during World War II, it was used by the Japanese Army, German armies, to keep their soldiers awake. Pretty much been with us worldwide since then. In 40s, 50s, 60s, it was made into a product called Benzedrine, which was used for asthmatics. Truck drivers discovered it was a really neat thing to stay awake on long-haul trucking. With the National Drug Act of the 1970s, really curtailed some of it. And that is when we begin to see a lot more of the clandestine labs. In the 90s, they begin to make some of the products harder to get and kind of slowed down again, and then people have figured out how to make it with other products. So it's still kind of amongst us. Maybe not as popular in some circles, but it is still, particularly, I talk to tribal police chiefs from all over the nation, particularly in Indian country, it is still an epidemic amongst us. A tweaker is a meth abuser who probably has not slept in 3 to 15 days and is irritable and paranoid. Tweakers are considered the most dangerous type of meth abuser to medical personnel and law enforcement officers. Tweakers often behave or react violently. And if a tweaker is using alcohol or another depressant, his negative feelings and associated dangers intensify. This is when we see people with hallucinations. They're talking to somebody that we're not seeing, carrying on a really good conversation, but That's kind of, in a nutshell, what you see when they say somebody is tweaking. Carol, is there anything you would like to add in your description of what we would call a tweaker?
I'm not sure that I have anything to add to the description of a tweaker. I could add that in the mental health field, the most common experience I have with folks that I'm working with is that they use methamphetamine as a way to change everything in their lives, and it becomes an addiction very quickly. And that's the part that's probably the saddest. It isn't a one-time deal. It usually is very rapidly becomes the one thing that your whole life is focused in. And the addictive aspect of methamphetamine use is the most frightening from my point of view as a clinician, because in order to help someone, they have to realize that they've been overwhelmed by the drug. And until somebody understands that they're being run by the drug, they can't really do much about it, so they keep switching. And alcohol is the legal drug that we can access pretty quickly anywhere. And most frequently, people will try to slow things down from being too high, and they will start drinking alcohol. And what happens biochemically is that you're really torquing your body in ways that make it quite unhappy, is the easiest way to put it. The inevitable outcome is that the paranoia that you're living with, that people that I associate with in my private practice and in my world at large, their experience of the paranoia is horrific. I don't have much else to say about it. The drug is very easily accessible anywhere in this county, and probably for that matter anywhere in the United States. I don't think we're living all alone up here. I think that everywhere is having very similar trials and tribulations. Candy, what's your experience?
What we were talking about earlier with the truck drivers and Benzedrine, methamphetamines is probably between 12 and 25% stronger than the crosstops that truck drivers took in the 70s and 80s. Because the chemicals used to make methamphetamine have been curtailed by the federal government, the chemicals that they use now to manufacture methamphetamines are individually incredibly dangerous. Combined together, they're both flammable, and they tend to blow up. So they mix these two chemicals together and then ingest it. So obviously, exactly what Carol is talking about physically happens to people who are using that. And they're in trouble way before they're at the stage that the paperwork identifies as tweakers. Hopefully, we're going to be able to assist in identifying and getting treatment services to people before they've gone days without sleep. Your body has to dream, and if you're not wise enough to lay down and sleep, your body will dream while you're awake. And that's basically why people hallucinate. In Willits Police Department recently at a middle school found what appeared to be Pop Rocks candy, which was actually methamphetamine that someone had put food coloring in. And it appears to be Pop Rocks. I personally haven't seen it in our schools or up here yet, but I would like parents to be aware that it's up here as close as Willits. As a general rule, what starts in Sonoma gradually comes to Laytonville, and find out if you've seen it yet in our community.
No, I've seen the email advisors they give us. I've never seen it in the real world yet. What we see is just plain old Kristen. And we haven't seen it spike. We haven't seen it. It's just fairly level. Same group she was in. There just haven't been many changes. It's the one, other than marijuana, it's the one constant drug in our world. All the others are coming in and out of fashion. Methamphetamine stays.
I just read You know, did you know here that 2011-2012 California Healthy Kids Survey, 12% of Laytonville High School. The minute I see percentage points, I question. But just the fact that we even are asking our kids, what's the last drug you used, how frequently, I see surveys all the time. And it just makes me want to keep talking and trying to get the word out. Methamphetamine is the quickest road to addiction. That one we know for sure. I think it beats tobacco at this point. It's a very, very addictive substance. And walking away from addiction takes an awful lot of energy, takes real focus. If we choose to walk away from our addiction, we spend the rest of our lives working on that practice, the practice of saying no to whatever we've become addicted to. And I think trying to get that information to our children is probably a really good thing. I don't smoke cigarettes any longer, and I don't smoke because my kids came into the school system at the era in which we suddenly were, as a nation, deciding that we were going to educate our kids about cigarettes. And so my children started saying things like, don't light that in the car. I'm in the car. And I finally woke up and thought, yeah, what the heck? The windows are closed up, it's wintertime, why should they put up with this? And little by little, it really chipped away at my delight in smoking cigarettes. And that was the reason. I don't know whether we can go this path with methamphetamine, but it might be something that we think about.
I think, as Carol said, meth is probably the most addictive drug known to man. Some of the statistics, and DOJ has promised me in a conversation with Washington a while back that they're going to update this statistic because it dates back to 2000, which is 12 years ago. But in the year of 2000, 8.8 million people in the United States reported trying methamphetamine at least once in their lifetime. And over, as Carol said, the questions for students is kind of spooky. Over a quarter of the high school students, senior high school students, indicated that it was fairly easy or very easy to obtain crystal meth on the high school campuses. So it's kind of spooky. And their stats don't say whether this is inner city, big city, small towns, but I think it's probably a pretty good cross-section of our nation. So it's out there and it is available to our young people.
I go into the jail once a week, and I see 10 people in a session in the morning and 10 in the afternoon, and the drug of choice is methamphetamine. And that's all free will. People who come to the little education thing that I do, is they're folks who choose to come. They're not told to come or anything like that. They're not required to show up. And I'm interested that it's been methamphetamine now for, I've been in the jail 6 years. It's been pretty much the drug of choice for most of the years that I've been going in. And I'm saying out of 10 people in any given group, 9 out of those 10 are methamphetamine folks. Now that doesn't speak to Laytonville, that speaks to the county, and that speaks to folks who have been picked up and are ending up in jail.
There's a stereotype of what an addict looks like, and addicts are not stereotypical. Every one of them is a unique human being. Every one of them is suffering from a disease. It's not a moral issue. It's not necessarily even a choice anymore. Their choice may have been taken away a long time ago.
It's interesting to think about what we do with our bodies and what we are thinking we're going to get out of this experience. And clearly the addiction, the only reason I'm talking about this is the addiction to doing something that changes how we feel is what it's about. And one of the two women talked about the fact that she didn't feel anything except the euphoria. And that euphoria only lasts a very short period of time. Very short period of time. Everything else is about chasing the drug. And I know that I'm talking to, you know, all of you are here because you already know everything I'm saying. But there's an energy that I have about this because I'd like us to wake everybody that we know up. I'd really like to give more people more information. And I know that when I'm under the influence, I can't get the information. But there's moments when folks stop for a brief second. And that's the moment when, if you happen to be standing next to them or walking along with them for whatever reason, you're in touch, that might be the moment to open the door of the conversation and just ask, hey, what's this like for you? And do you want to do something different? I invite you to get brave enough to ask anybody that you're dealing with in your daily life who you know is under the influence when that there's a moment, and we all know when it is, when they actually can give us eye contact and suddenly, oh, they're home for a minute. And if they're home for a minute, that's the moment to open the conversation. I hope you're willing to do that.
That was a recording from a public forum on meth awareness that was held in Laytonville last November. It was organized by Laytonville Healthy Start. The purpose of the forum was to provide information, introduce healthcare resources, and answer questions from the public. People in attendance felt that their community is wise to explore social problems in the open. An informed community is a healthy community. Now, Hanani, are you aware of any meth being used by high school students?
So, we were talking about this earlier, and I have not heard or seen that anybody is using it at the high school. That does not mean there's nobody using it, but I have not heard anything. What do you think, Emma and Heaven?
Well, I don't know. I don't think that there's any meth going around, but there are different drugs going around that, to me, are just as bad as meth. Like, at parties and stuff, I've heard of a lot of ecstasy and Molly, which is pure ecstasy, going around, and I think that, I mean, that's just as bad.
Well, I don't think meth is really the biggest problem now. It might have been a really big problem 3 to 5 years ago, but the times are changing, and so are the drugs that are being handed out to our kids. And I would say that meth probably isn't the biggest problem right now. It would be the ecstasy, and it would be the marijuana, and it would be the alcohol being given out at parties.
I think that's our main problem, is the marijuana and the alcohol that lead kids to do the stupid things that they do. But meth and oxy and those, like you said, were once popular a couple years ago, really aren't a problem in our high school anymore.
Yeah, I think because they were saying it's in that that recording we just heard, they were saying that meth is really easy to get on the high school campus, and I think that that's really big with marijuana right now, is that you can get it anywhere. I mean, it's there. You don't have to worry about it.
I mean, I think people look at methamphetamines as a worst case of a drug, and that's more serious, and I think people are almost scared to try it, rather opposed to like marijuana, where they just think it's, oh, it's marijuana, we can just smoke it and get high.
Yeah.
I think people take meth a little more seriously, and that's why high schoolers don't really go toward that. I mean, in our high school anyway.
Yeah, and I could imagine people in our high school, if there ever was meth going around, like a lot of them would be like, oh yeah, like, ooh, meth, I'll try that, like talking the talk. And then I think that once it came to that, they would just like be scared and back out.
I think there'd be a lot of squealing going on and telling on people, honestly.
Oh yeah,
there's such big talk about meth, and everyone makes like a really big deal about it, and that's why the students are scared, that's why kids are scared. And I guess in our community it's easy to get a hold of marijuana because it's on the streets, it's, you know, in our neighborhoods and everything, everywhere you go, it's easy to get. And then ecstasy is just a step up from that. But once it got to meth, like, there's so much bad talk about it that they get frightened. They don't want to do it. So marijuana and ecstasy to them is completely different than going full hard on meth.
And like I said, I think it's been built into the other kids' mind that pot's really not that bad because everyone in the county, everyone in the nation does it, it seems. So it's really not that bad. I think that's what they think anyway. But I don't see any type of drug not being bad.
Mm-hmm. We were doing I'm a peer counselor, and we were looking at the statistics for the use of different drugs and tobacco, alcohol use in the different schools. And we saw that the difference between what people thought and what really was going on was significant. People would think 70 to 80% of people in the high school are using drugs or using marijuana or, you know, drinking alcohol. And we would look at the statistics and see that the number was more than half, was less than half of, what am I trying to say? if it was 70%, it would be 35% or even less number of people doing the things that people thought. So everybody's saying we're doing it because everybody's doing it, but there's no real reason, or nobody knows that everybody is doing it, you know.
And I think that's one of the main problems, is everyone wants to try to fit in and conform to society from peer pressure and everything to be cool. Or
that's what I was gonna say. I think that was like going back to our point on how people will talk the talk, but really it's not really happening because they're scared.
Our other topic today is mock trial. Mock trial is the name of an extracurricular program in which students participate in simulated courtroom trials to learn new skills and compete with each other. The mock trials are set up and structured just like a real court, bound by the same rules. This can help students to know exactly what role each of the different people in a court, e.g. judges, lawyers, witnesses, etc., do in the judicial system. The students prepare both defense and prosecution teams, and professional judges judge the outcome of the trial. There are a minimum of 8 members on the mock trial team.
At Laytonville High School, we are prepared for the trials by Ms. McHenry, Mr. Potter, and our legal advisors, Beth Norman and Sarah Potter. We are grateful for their guidance. Ukiah, Fort Bragg, Laytonville High School, Redwood Academy, and Developing Virtue are the schools that compete in February to see who will represent Mendocino County in the state finals. Well, not to brag, but we at Laytonville are returning as a county champions again for the fourth consecutive year.
We're going to discuss how our program works, what the actual mock trials are like, and what we gain by putting a lot of time into this program. We'll talk for about 20 to 30 minutes and then open the phone lines for your questions and comments. We're at the Willett Studio, and our phone number will be 707-456-9991. We really appreciate your involvement in our shows and hope that you'll join the conversation. Hanani, let's begin by describing the trials we were involved in last month.
So the trial we are still involved in is a hit-and-run case. It involves two high school students who were driving back from a swim meet one night, and they hit a bicyclist. And you were the bicyclist, Evan.
Yes, I was. I portrayed Cameron Douglas on the prosecution side, and I was hit. But it's debatable as to who was driving the car.
Yeah, so we have evidence that shows that it was the car. We're not disputing that the car was involved in the accident. But the problem is who was driving. One person says the other was driving, the other says the other was driving. So the case is basically trying to find who was the person driving. And there's evidence pointing to each of them as suspects.
Although I do make a point to try and blame Adrian for driving the car, it's also debatable because how credible am I as a witness for it happened so fast. I was hit by a moving car. There were no streetlights out except for maybe one. And there were headlights in my eyes. So although I claim to have seen Adrian, it could very well have been Tony who Adrian says was driving.
Well, and also a lot of people think that the witness you're portraying is biased because Adrian, who is
he's a defendant.
Yeah, he's the mayor's son. And before Cameron was working with another mayor, they say this in the witness statements, that Cameron was working with another mayor to try to get bike laws passed. And this other mayor, Adrian's mom, won. And Cameron doesn't like her because she took out all the bike laws and people think that she's biased towards that mayor.
I mean, coming from a prosecutor's standpoint, it's really hard for us to prosecute this case because, like Hanani was said, one says one was driving, the other one says the other one was driving, so it's a classic case of he said, she said. So it's really hard to pin down with multiple cases of bias, false identifications, unreliable witnesses. It's really hard for us prosecutors to pin down a credible story to prove that Adrian Vega was the one driving. So it's a really defense-sided case, and the defense usually blows the prosecution out of the water with it because there's so much reasonable doubt that it's not even funny.
And Funny enough, Colton likes to see himself as a prosecutor. I try to believe people's stories. I'm a defense attorney this year, and I do not think the defendant was the person driving during the time of the murder. As I look at the so-called passenger who is not the defendant, I really think he was the one driving, because there's so much evidence pointing against him. He came from Italy just because he wanted to swim here, and swimming is more like his life. So if he gets thrown in jail for what he did, he could be deported. It could just change a lot for him, and he has more at stake than Adrian. Adrian is the son of the mayor. I mean, they're rich, they have everything they need, but this other person is bunking with them. He's trying to start a career in life. He doesn't have anything. So to me, I feel like he has motive to lie in this case.
I'm on both sides. I'm a prosecutor and a defense attorney. And when I'm on prosecution, like I said, it's really tough. It's a tough prosecution case. But when I'm on defense, I just make sure to hammer the point that we don't know who was driving. We have no hardcore solid evidence that either one of them was driving, and that's the exact definition of reasonable doubt. So like Hanani was saying, maybe Tony has a greater motive to lie in this case, but so does Adrian with his reputation with being the mayor's son. Tony could lose his immigration status. Adrian could lose his reputation. So, you know, like, it's just a basic case of he said, she said.
Well, and also Adrian, he really wants to go to his dream college. What was it, like the University of Los Angeles. Yeah, he's like really, really trying to get into that college, and if he gets arrested, then he's not going there.
But so. Then so is Tony. Tony is also...
He could be deported.
Yeah, he wants to go to the University of Los Angeles too, and is, you know, both their dream schools. They really, really want to go to that school, so...
Well, I'm also with Colton. It could very well be either one of them. I'm on both the prosecution and the defense side. On prosecution, I'm the victim. I'm the one who gets hit, and I claim it's Adrian. But also on the defense side, I'm one of Adrian's closest friends, you know, known him for years. And there's also, in my statement, I say he's very responsible. He's a really good driver. He's, like, rules in his household have been hammered into his head since he was a kid that, you know, watch out for bikers, be responsible, don't text while driving. And so it could very well be either one of them. I also say that Tony is a horrible driver, has a habit of running through stop signs. So on defense, it's perfectly credible that Tony could have been the one driving. But then again, on prosecution, it's the same way. They're almost evenly balanced as to who could have been driving.
I agree with Heaven 100%. There's so much conflicting testimony. It really comes down to who do you believe more and who has a more credible story. And like I said, just who do you believe? Because there's so much conflicting testimony. Both sides make sense. So it's really up to the judge, the trier of fact, to really try to sort out the weeds.
It also comes down to like your acting skills too, because you can know everything in your witness statement, but if you don't put true emotion behind it, if you don't completely encompass the character to the best of your ability, you could easily lose the case because you don't sound credible.
And that's the thing with mock trial. It's not if you win or lose your case. It's how you perform. You're scored on how well you question your witnesses, how well your witnesses perform, how well you argue your objections, your pretrial motions. So, again, it really does, in real life and in mock trial, all come down to acting and who can present the better case. I mean, the court's a theater, so, yeah. And the attorneys and witnesses are just actors.
And because it's so hard for us to, like on prosecution, it's so hard for us to win a case because of, like, things not being credible and all that. A lot of the times we'll try to look for the tiniest little thing and just flip it around, and then that could help us win the case. Like, you flip it around and it could change the entire trial. Like, so we try to look for the little things and make them into big things.
Now, Emma was on prosecution with me, and we've got a couple of convictions, which were actually very surprising to me because no judge in their right mind should convict the defendant. Even though he was convicted, do you think that justice was served? Like, do you feel like there was solid enough evidence to have that conviction? And did you feel like you were confident in that he did it when he was convicted?
No, I don't think that there was enough reasonable doubt, I don't think that there was enough evidence for him to be convicted, because there was no witness who actually saw him driving the car. Nobody ever saw him. So that's our huge problem in this case, is that there's literally no one who saw who was actually driving. They thought they saw the person. They explained what they were wearing and, like, all these things, but no one ever actually saw the person.
Yeah, we have claims from our witness statements. Like, Cameron claims that he saw the driver, but only for a split second. But then again, how credible is that? I could have just recognized the car. I've seen it around town, seeing Adrian driving it, and I could have easily, in that moment of hysteria, placed Adrian in the driver's seat when really I might not even actually seen the driver.
So I was reading the definition of mock trial from Mendocino County Office of Education, mm-hmm. and it says here, I'm just giving a little excerpt. It's based on important issues currently facing America's youth. So do you think hit and run incidents are something common that affects our youth right now, or?
Well, I mean, no, I wouldn't say so much felony hit and run. I mean, I just got a speeding ticket a couple weeks ago. I mean, I think that's more of an issue than felony hit and run. I think speeding can turn into maybe a felony hit and run.
Well, in this case, they also talk about how they think that the reason he got in the hit and run accident is because they thought he was texting and driving. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a big thing mm-hmm. still in our youth today, is texting and driving. And it takes one second. And I think that's a big problem.
And there was testimony also that says that he was speeding at least 10 to 15 miles over the speed limit, so.
And that's a general consensus fact. That's coming consistently from a couple different people, not just one. There's no conflicting testimony on that one, so that was a good fact to have.
So speeding and texting at the same time is like, you don't have control while you're speeding sometimes, and then you're texting at the same time.
You're just not paying attention.
Yeah.
Double whammy.
So, Colton, do you want to describe what a courtroom looks like for mock trial?
Well, mock trials are just like real-life, everyday court cases. We walk into court. One team will be prosecution or defense, and another school would be prosecution or defense. If Laytonville were to walk in as a prosecution, we'd maybe go up against Ukiah or Fort Bragg's defense team. There'd be a real time judge there, professional. You'd have your four witnesses on each side. They'd each be called to the witness stand. You have your jury box, even though there's no jury. They're all bench trials. You both have counsel tables that you sit at, prosecution and defense, and each school would take turns calling their four witnesses. The other side would have a chance to cross-examine those witnesses and ask their questions. And you do the same for the other side, and it's pretty much just like a real-life trial. I mean, you can't get any more real than what mock trial is to the real thing.
Yeah, like in the real trials, you can't walk through the well unless you ask, and the judge says, like, oh, yeah, that's okay. So we have to do the exact same thing in mock trial. We can't walk through the well unless the judge says it's okay. So I think it's really cool how they portray it exactly how it is.
I mean, we argue the same objections that lawyers would do, hearsay, relevancy, exceptions to hearsay, and so forth. And you argue against the other school, and you argue to the judge, and the other opposing counsel would make their argument. The judge rules, overruled, sustained, and you try to build yourself back up. If it's sustained or overruled, you can keep going.
Yeah, and also, just so you know, the well is the space that is in between the attorney's tables and the judge. So
Heaven, this is your first year of being in mock trial. What do you think of it?
Well, mock trial, I would imagine, is just as nerve-wracking as court, but it's also a lot of fun. It's really, really competitive. You wouldn't think so at first. I knew when I first joined, I thought you just read off the script and just get through it, but it's a lot more than that. It's your acting skills. It's your nerves. You have to be able to control yourself. Don't fidget. don't play with your hair, try to look at the judge. It's all these things, these little tiny things that you're being judged on. And it also forces you to talk in front of a bunch of people because a lot of parents come and watch. And so it's definitely helped with me talking in front of big crowds. Like just recently we've had a talent show and I was the MC, one of the MCs for the talent show. I was introducing the acts. And I know a year ago I would not have been able to do that if it weren't for mock trial. And I know I wouldn't be here on radio doing this if it weren't for mock trial, because I've been able to talk in front of so many people that it's just second nature to me now.
I think another something else I like about mock trial is the teamwork. You cannot just say, okay, I'm going out there and I'm going to shine. You have to work with everybody and know what it is all about, because if you know the whole case, then it helps you. But if you decide to stick to your own and not help anybody or receive help from others, then it becomes fragmented and people do not understand what is even happening. It just does not work that way.
Yeah, I mean, it really is a team effort. Like, even when you're arguing objections, when you're questioning a witness and you get an objection and it catches you off guard, you always have two other attorneys sitting at the table willing to help you or come up with an argument or such. So
yeah, a lot of the times you have to think on your feet too, because sometimes
a lot of that.
Sometimes your co-counsel, like, they don't know the answer. Like the other attorneys on your team, they might not know the answer, and they're like, you have to think on your feet.
And everyone always questioned, like, why Laytonville? They're such a small school. Why did they beat us? And we go against a lot of very big schools. And it's because of the amount of kids that we have in the competition, the size of our school. Most of these kids have grown up with each other. Like, they know the ins and outs of, like, home life and everything. And we've got so little people on our team that it would be a job just to separate yourself and keep to yourself. It's like everything you do is with every person on the team, and it's all chemistry is what it is.
Oh, another thing that's really fun about this is so, like, the people who come into our group every year for mock trial, they're all so different, and you wouldn't imagine yourself, like, hanging out with them in the school year, but in mock trial you get to know them so well, and you would never expect yourself to hang out with them before, but you're, like, good friends with them and you have a lot of laughs, and it's always so fun even though you're so different.
It's even going to state for 4 years, my 4 years, this will be the fourth, I still have friends that I made my freshman year from state mock trial. Like, we still talk to them, we still talk, and we confer with each other and say, hey, did your team make it to state this year or such? And even at state, it's just you all are like one big law family, and you just kind of all come together, and it's just, you have such a great time in the evenings at the hotels, you go to trials during the day, and it's just really comfortable. It's really a program that you can relate to other people because it's one interest, and it's just, it's truly a great program.
Yeah, I definitely enjoy all the trips we have. Yeah, this is my fourth year too, and the trips, those, I really, really enjoy all of them, because like Colton said, you make friends, we hang out together, you know, there are different things you get to know about other people when you see them outside of school. There's a different behavior, a different thing you learn each time you go out with these people, and it's just so much fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think, honestly, we're very thankful to have Mr. Potter, because we wouldn't have these experiences if it wasn't for him. Because we go to the Santa Clara scrimmage to help us out before our county mock trial competition, and that definitely helps us a lot because it gets us competing with bigger schools. And he gets all these things together for us, and it's just like, it's a big help, and he's great, so...
Although MCOE is able to pay for team member registration fees, lodging, and a portion of the transportation expense, the school must still raise approximately $6,000 to cover student meals for 3 days and the balance of travel costs. Donations from interested supporters can be made payable to the Laytonville High State Mock Trial Team and sent to Laytonville High School, the CO Bruce Potter, P.O. Box 868, Laytonville, California 95454.
We definitely need donations. We need to do some fundraisers because
We have to go all the way to Riverside this year.
That's also a big thing, is that there's a lot of people who, like, haven't even been on a plane before, and we're like, Mr. Potter, like I said again, he's giving us these experiences, and these people who are donating to us, I mean, we're so thankful. So
I mean, mock trial has opened up great opportunities for me. Like, I actually want to go to college and go to law school and actually become a lawyer. But mock trial has opened up so many opportunities for me. My sophomore year, when I could start driving, I started going down to the district attorney's office and working with D.A. Beth Norman and Heidi Larson and such, and going to court and going back to spin off the drug thing that we heard earlier. I go to drug court with Beth on Fridays usually, and seeing what drugs can do in the legal system, going into the drug court program and graduating from the drug court program. It's going into the judicial program, having a problem with drugs isn't always a bad thing. They're not just there to reprimand you. Like, the drug court program can actually help you and get you treatments and stuff like that. So, I mean, I've been to law conferences in Washington, D.C., at Stanford here in California, and mock trial has really given me those opportunities to go and do those type of things. So it really opens up a lot of opportunities if you're actually interested in the field of law. And even if you're not interested in the field of law, it's still life skills, public speaking, confidence builder, whatever it is. I mean, it really does help.
And getting,
Go for it.
Okay. And getting out of just like Laytonville, because it's so tiny. I mean, a lot of people want to stay in Laytonville and just like, no offense, but sit there. And when you go out of, like, to these other places and travel with the mock trial team, it opens your mind to things that you could do after high school, like maybe going to college out of state, which is a great opportunity. So,
I mean, I was one of those people who Emma mentioned earlier that had never been on a plane before my junior year. In the summer of my junior year, I went to 3 law conferences in Washington, D.C., and that was the first time I'd ever been on a plane. I had to leave San Francisco, get a connecting flight in Boston, and fly to D.C. And it turns out I was delayed out of San Francisco, missed my connecting flight in Boston, was late to my law conference. But it was an overall amazing experience. And it was all because of mock trial. Like, I went to Washington, D.C. and participated in mock trials.
And just like Colton said, even if you don't want to go into law school, mock trial really helps. I mean, I used to be really timid in front of strangers. I hated making eye contact. I couldn't stand talking to people I didn't know. But mock trial makes you interact with people that you would never see on a daily basis.
Never.
And, I mean, it puts you in a really stressful situation, but it teaches you how to deal with the stressful situations. So now when I go out, if I have a question or if I don't know what I'm doing, I can easily talk to people and get answers that I need. And I feel a lot more confident going out in public, because I know that if I get into a situation that isn't completely perfect, then I can get my way out of it by communicating with people around me. And I wouldn't have done that before.
Mm-hmm. It really does give you a confidence boost and a sense of independence and stuff like that.
Like, it for me, before I came into mock trial, I did not know anything about the judicial system. I came to America when I was in 9th grade, and of course I did not know anything about the judicial system. I did not know, you know, what you would call a lawyer here. Would you say an attorney or something? I did not know anything about that. So doing mock trial helped me see what the system is like. Now I know that, okay, this is a judge, this is a bailiff, you know, the difference between all of those and what their roles are. So I think it helps in that too.
And our team, we don't have a class. A lot of schools have a mock trial class that they take in their normal day of high school, but we don't have that, so we have to meet after school as much as possible and do as much as we can in that little amount of time. And so preparing for this is really hard for us, but just coming together and getting it done, like, we always make it happen, and that's really cool. And this is our 4th consecutive year winning the county competition, and almost all the other schools in our county have it as a class, and we don't. So it just shows you how much we work. And
a lot of hard work and dedication. Yeah. And how much it takes. I mean, a lot of people don't realize it's, they just say, oh, it's all scripted. It's, they write it before they memorize it. It's really a lot of dedication and hard work and that goes into it.
It's not just the preparation and the time out of your day for the children either. It's also for the parents and the guardians of the children. They take time out of their week. They form their schedule around your mock trial practices.
We even meet on weekends.
In your tournaments and everything. Like, I can't even imagine how hard it must be, like, for my grandmother to change her weekly routine to make sure that I can make it to these mock trial practices so that I can do well in the competition and I can help my team the way I should and the way everybody else on the team should.
It's always amazing to me that we win, because every year mock trial is during basketball season and there's always problem with people coming to practice. Come for practice. Nobody wants to come for practice. They're going for basketball. They have a game. They have practice. And it's, we always think, well, we're not going to win because, you know, nobody's paying any attention. But I don't know how it happens. 1 week before.
We pull it together somehow.
3 days before, 2 days before. Well, people have everything together. It's amazing to me. I don't understand.
I have basketball, or I played basketball, and I had mock trial as well. And a lot of the times I'd be like, Mr. Potter, I can't make it today. Like, I have to go to practice. I have a game tomorrow.
Well, not to mention a college prep class schedule as well.
Yeah, also that. And so I would have to work my way around my schedule, and I'd have to stay up super late at night studying just to make sure I got my mock trial in. And then, like, right after basketball, got out and we were getting ready for the county competition, it's like you slam down on that work. You have to work so hard if you're in basketball. So.
Okay, we're going to open the phone lines now. The phone number is 456-9991. Everyone is welcome to call, and we'd especially like to encourage the youth, their parents, and concerned friends of the listening audience. Please call in if you have questions or insights about mock trial or about the meth awareness public forum that was held in Laytonville. What do you think of the mock trial program? How have you learned about the way our judicial system works, or is it still a mystery to you? Do you think that our judicial system is fair? Are there parts of our system that you think could change? Is methamphetamine a problem in your community? Do you think that education can help people avoid this substance? Is there a similarity between meth use and widespread popularity of coffee and the so-called energy drinks? Is there a difference between cocaine abuse and meth abuse? Does our culture push us toward the use of antidepressants, both the pharmaceutical and black market varieties? Would it be useful to have a meth awareness public forum in your community? Like I said, the phone number is 456-9991. When you call, please be ready to turn down your radio or we'll get a very confusing echo. The number is 456-9991. Please call and be a part of this discussion on mock trial and methamphetamines. Please call soon. The show will be over at 4 o'clock. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, I am just calling to make a comment because I've been listening to You Speaks Out for a few years now, most of the times that you're on the air. And I have heard a couple of you on the show a couple of different times, more than a couple times. And all of you in this show in particular really illustrate what you're talking about as gains from participating in the mock trial, because you're so clear. I don't hear any nervousness. You've been really comprehensive in explaining how the mock trial works. And I want to say, Hanani in particular, there's such a clarity I'm hearing, and compared to maybe 2 years ago or something like that. It's just a very, very good, tight presentation about all the work that you've done, and it shows how much you've gained from it. I would like to ask whether any of you think the judicial system seriously needs to be changed. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Sometimes they say, well, the system failed or the system doesn't work. And in most cases, it's true. It either works or it doesn't. I mean, sometimes you can't please everyone, and everyone's going to feel that justice wasn't done to them, or justice was really done to them, or it was unfair because the judge ruled this way. I think it just goes back to, you can't please everyone, and the law is what the law is. and sometimes you can't get around it, or you can get around it, and it's just, you can't please everyone.
Yeah, and I think that the judges really look at the facts. Like, in mock trial, at least, they really look at the facts. They dig into everything you're saying, so.
I mean, the United States has one of the highest burdens of proof that a country can have. So we really, and I think that's what upsets a lot of people, is that that burden is so high to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. If someone is accused of killing a mother, a father, a sister, a brother, they automatically want them put in jail, but you just can't do that. You know, you have to have a trial. You have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that they are guilty. And I think that angers a lot of people, because I think that they think they're not getting their fair share. So,
you were saying something about the death penalty. What do you think of the death penalty?
The death penalty, probably one of the most controversial issues. Personally, I'm for the death penalty. But maybe that's just because I want to be a prosecutor. I get that it's expensive and hard to use, and it's very controversial. But again, I mean, I don't know. Personally, sometimes it could be put to very good use. But other times, like there was a Troy Davis case. If you were to review that, there was so much evidence that was contradictory or circumstantial and everything, and that yet they refused to do it. And going back to that other caller's previous call, I think that's a moment where the system could have failed in that moment. So I'm not saying that the death penalty is always a good thing, but I'm saying it could be used possibly more.
Why do they use the death penalty? Like, when is it mostly given, do you think?
Usually capital crimes, first-degree murders, you know, stuff like that. But again, everyone who opposes the death penalty always raises the question of, why is it okay to kill another human being for killing another human being? Why is that ethical? How is that okay? You're killing someone for killing someone. Why is that okay? And I think that's the biggest counter argument that there is.
Well, Heaven, what do you think of killing somebody? You know, what other punishment should there be for somebody who has killed another person? What punishment do you think is best?
Well, I think it all comes down to what you see. Like, is life in prison for killing someone as bad as the death penalty? Or would you rather forego your freedom and just, you know, have the death penalty? So we only have a few minutes left, so if you have a question or a comment, call now at 456-9991.
Caller, you're on air.
Yes, hi, thank you. Fascinating program. I'm wondering if in the work that you're doing to prepare for mock trial, or in your classroom work, any of you have heard, and the reason I'm calling to ask this question is because you started talking about the death penalty. Have you heard about the Innocence Project? Do you know what it means? Do you know what it's all about? And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Personally, I've heard of the Innocence Project. Our mock trial coach's daughter, Sarah Potter, is very involved with the Innocence Project. And honestly, I do think the Innocence Project is a very great program. I think it goes to balancing out the judicial system if something was unfair or something circumstantial. I think that it gets ironed out. So I do think the Innocence Project is a good project and a good program. So, I mean, I think it goes both ways.
Caller, you're on air.
Yes, I'd like to know, since you've been doing the meth awareness and the justice thing, are you seeing a connection between the drugs on the street and how we do our rehabilitation programs and how we're doing our, what kind of correlation do you see? Because it seems like our prisons are filling up and we have money for that, or we don't even have money for that. But we actually don't have money for rehab. And when we have all these drug problems, we need to be able to have solutions for them. And what do you think the justice, how does that work into that? Thank you.
Thank you.
I mean, we just recently had something passed called AB 109, which was a criminal justice realignment, saying that anything that wasn't sexual, violent, or serious based, you wouldn't go to county jail for. I mean, you would just be sent to county jail for everything that was nonviolent, non-sexual, and non-serious. And only the more serious crimes were being sent to the prisons because they were overpopulated. I don't think that people are getting the amount of help that they could, honestly. I mean, I think it all stems back to the mental health system and the rehabilitation system. I think we do need to improve in areas like that. But it's hard to say if there's a correlation because you can't read people's minds of what makes them tick and what makes them not tick. I mean, it all comes back to that one individual person.
Caller, you're on air.
Hi, really interesting show. Have any youth called in? I just feel like yet another little middle-aged lady. Anyway, I was thinking it would be interesting to think about what that justice system, you know, to the extent in context that you guys are studying and working with it, you know, what is its goal? What does it do? What is it to do for the perpetrator? What is it to do for the victims, if any? What is it to do for the public? And what is it to do for the, you know, the state, the government? And how does it do, this is too late in the show for you to probably think about it now, but, you know, and how well does it do those things? Because one thing I've thought, and this may be naive, but if you've done something wrong, and sometimes you don't know that you've done something wrong until somebody lets you know, okay? Sometimes you know you're doing something wrong and you just need to get caught. But once you're caught, it almost seems like the natural reaction or the graceful reaction would be to feel bad. But if you immediately, if you have to get involved in the justice system, you're immediately in the position with a defense attorney of defending yourself. And it seems counterintuitive to me to be immediately in the position of having to defend yourself when what you really should be doing is dealing with remorse and, you know, like atonement.
Yes.
Anyway, those are just some thoughts. Thank you for the show. Bye.
Thank you for calling.
That's all for this month's edition of You Speaks Out. Your hosts today have been me, Colton.
Hanani.
Emma.
And Heaven.
Laneville Healthy Start Coalition's Drug-Free Communities Project is proud to support this month's You Speaks Out. Our environmental prevention strategies in the community, also known as EPIC Project, is funded by the Office of National Drug Control Policy. Through our organization and coalition, we are working towards reducing youth substance abuse through a variety of strategies in the Laneville community. If you are interested in learning more about our efforts, please contact Laneville Healthy Start at 707-984-8089 or email jmshields@pacific.net. You Speaks Out is produced and directed by Dan Roberts, who may be reached by mail at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490, or through the website www.youspeaksout.net. There you can find out more information about the project, get addresses for contacting us, get a copy of the show, and listen to many hours of previous programs on streaming radio. The views expressed in this program are not necessarily those of KZYX. They are the views of those who express them. You Speaks Out is aired on the first Sunday of each month. Our next show will be in 5 weeks. That is April 7th at 3 p.m. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in April.